we get things rolling this afternoon by getting on the G&M Family Market phone line and welcoming back to the show author whose work you see all kinds of places like Slate, The New Yorker, Rolling Stone, Sports Illustrated. He's a frequent contributor to NPR's Weekend Edition. Colin Fleming joins us again on Downtown. Colin, welcome back.
Hey, how you doing, Rich?
I'm doing great. We got you on here today because it's a very big day. 40 years ago today, the death of Elvis Presley, and I'm so damn old, I actually made that announcement on the air as a young radio guy 40 years ago.
Are you swiveling your hips in the studio today?
Yeah, as always.
Elvis is passing.
I do that as a matter of course anyway, but here we are 40 years later, and there are people out there who ask if Elvis is still relevant, so I ask you that.
I've been hearing that a lot lately, and frankly, I find it kind of irksome. I think it has something to do with Elvis, this notion of him that we know now almost as like the cartoon Elvis, where he's bloated, it's the end of his life, he is at some hockey rink in Indiana, he's singing and handing out scarves to middle-aged women, and it's that fat Elvis notion, that sort of like end of his life crooner that's just lost it. And I think that has trumped in some people's minds the reality of what this guy really was at one point, early on in his career, and then later in 1968 with his comeback. But this was a guy we can properly call, I think, a modernist, but a blues modernist, which is a crazy notion because we think of the blues as like old and dusty, but Elvis had a way of almost like retrofitting Mississippi Delta Loam with like something proto space age. It was unlike anything else you could have heard at the time. And I think that early music from the mid 50s is still unlike anything else you've heard since.
And some of that is included in a brand new box set that's coming out soon of his very early work. And one of the things he did was to take those blues songs, whether it was Arthur Crudup's kind of stuff or Big Mama Thornton, and make it sound not quite blues, not quite country, and then take country music, Blue Moon in Kentucky, and make that sound not quite as country as it was.
I almost think of it as like monorail kind of music. Like, there was a time when Disney World was like so new, monorail, and you think like, wow, what could be like as futuristic as this? And yet it was entirely of its time as well. And I think that's what that early, like, 1953, 54, 55, 56 Elvis is kind of getting at. Now, one of the charges leveled against him these days is that he was appropriating black culture and was some sort of a thief. And I find that silly. The same thing was sort of said about Gene Vincent, Bebopalula. People said, you're just ripping off Elvis. And Elvis went up to Gene Vincent and said, no, man, you're not ripping me off. Just do your thing. You know, if that's what's natural inside of you, that's what you should be going with. And it's what Elvis always went with in those early, especially the pre-fame years.
He was, of course, so different and so distinctive, and certainly for his time a rebel. But was he a safe rebel, first because he was white, and second because he always had that religious side of him?
No, I don't think he was remotely safe at all. If you watch some of his early television appearances, it's like, oh my God, are you allowed to do this on TV? It is so lascivious that I don't think you could put it on right now. Like, it's still fairly shocking when you see those clips. And as for his gospel music, and he used to claim that he knew every single gospel song ever written. And he wasn't the man, like, given over to boasting either. So there probably was, like, some degree of truth in that. His gospel albums, they rock harder than most secular albums by anybody, by like a James Brown, by an early Rolling Stone. So he was always sort of working that blend between the spiritual and the secular. But you could say the same thing about like Shane McGowan and the Pogues. And they certainly, you know, were rabble-rousers of a kind. But I think Elvis was like the earliest version we have of that. But no, definitely not safe, not emotionally safe. It was always heavily emotionally invested music. It always felt like the world was at stake when Elvis was in his prime singing.
When musically do you think it churned for him? Was it when Colonel Parker came along? Was it when he went away to the Army for a while and came back and it was all about the movies?
He roared back from the Army with Elvis Is Back, was his album that came out. And it's one of the finest blues albums of the 1960s. So he was still good at that point. John Lennon maintained that Elvis lost it completely when he was in the Army. But he came out, he was in a lot of bad films that you can see in the middle of the night, like at 3 o'clock. There's always Elvis doing something like Waikiki-wise on some beach with bikini girls. And he lost the plot for a while, but you could always find sort of buried away nuggets on those soundtrack albums that's like, oh, hey, maybe Elvis is really coming back. And then he came back full bore, of course, in 1968 when he gave those concerts in Burbank in the round, where he's revisiting a lot of that 1954-55 material. And what normally happens for a singer at that point with that much of a gap is that they're on the downside of the hill. But he could still stretch out on songs like Trying to Get to You with more ferocity and more virtuosity than he had even in his son heyday. So it was pretty impressive.
We're talking with Colin Fleming here on Downtown. And even after that 68 special, I thought there were, yeah, every once in a while there would be those great moments, whether it was doing a little Tony Joe White song or you know, even something as kind of hokey as Burning Love or Chuck Berry's Promised Land. He still put some passion into it that might not have otherwise been there with other singers.
From Elvis in Memphis is a great album. I mean, came out in, 1969? And everyone's like, whoa, Abbey Road by the Beatles must be the best album of that year. Like, well, I don't know. I mean, I feel like From Elvis in Memphis could kind of throw with the Beatles' Abbey Road. It's that strong. And he always had that incredibly, like, melismatic sort of range, operatic range to his vocals. That's there in the 1970s. He gave some wonderful concerts in Vegas, which he always kind of had a weird relationship with. And this box set has some, I don't even think you'd call them like concert recordings. They are so early. They are from the Louisiana Hayride radio program. It's like, this is what the term field recordings was invented for. I mean, it sounds like it has been dug out of the earth. Like, it's almost like audio archaeology. But you listen to it, and it's just so primal, but so finessed at the same time. And no one could really do that like he could.
And when you listen to those very early recordings, like That's All Right, Mama, and some of those others done at Sun Records, it sounds like nothing else you will hear. How much of that was Sam Phillips?
I think in terms of the production, like that slapback, like we associate certain sounds with certain bands, certain era. Like you think about like the Factory Records sound that Joy Division was getting in the late 70s. It's highly endemic to Joy Division. That Sun slapback bass sound, that echo, that reverb, that's very Sam Phillips. I mean, he, I would say, contributed more sonically in terms of just the overall presentation for Elvis than like George Martin did for the early Beatles. Now that shifted later as they got more involved in the studio. But Elvis would joke, so much reverb on his voice. He would say, I'm under there somewhere. Like, but when you hear the Louisiana Hayride recordings, obviously there's no reverb or anything. It was just those guys in the room. But Sam Phillips was important, and so was the band.
Yeah, Bill Black and those guys, yeah.
Yeah, that Bill Black, those bass lines, and then you have Scotty Moore, and this was obviously before any era of guitar heroes, but he was like an axe master. Some of the lines, and he doesn't solo that often. He's kind of like Pete Townsend in that way, and I think Pete Townsend of The Who absorbed a lot of what Scotty Moore was doing, that you can be like the best guitar player of your decade, and you don't have to be flash, and you don't have to be soloing for 12 bars. It's ornamentation. It's learning how to play off of what the singer is singing. And Scotty Moore was a master at that.
Obviously, one of the things we love to do in popular culture is build people up and then tear them down, but then also rediscover them. Had Elvis lived into a normal age, 70s or maybe even hanging around at 81, 82 years old today, would the appreciation of him as an artist have grown, or would it have been reduced by being out there that long?
I think we have a tendency only to pay attention to things that are put in front of our face these days, rather than go out and seek education on our own, which is a shame, because you'd think, like, with YouTube, you could master a lot of Elvis's back catalog, like, in an afternoon. But people don't tend to do that. I think, in terms of Elvis, along the lines of what Phil Spector said, the producer, he said to someone, and this is, like, back in the 60s or whatever, someone said, like, Elvis isn't that good. So Elvis was around. And Phil Spector, who had heard some things, said, he's so good, you can't even understand how good he is. And I think, like, you can kind of say the same thing about, I don't know, Wayne Gretzky, like Picasso maybe, Mozart. There aren't a lot of people we can make that claim about. I think Elvis could have morphed into something along the lines of Dylan without the songwriting prowess. So maybe like a Mississippi John Hurt type of figure. And he could have been around to shepherd some of his own legacy into better care. But I don't know. It's sad to me to see that he's so disposable now. When he was doing things as modernistically bold, to my thinking, is what James Joyce was doing. He was a blues modernist.
Is he the most important figure in American pop culture in the 20th century?
That's tough, because you have Louis Armstrong, I mean, from the music strata. You have someone like Duke Ellington, but their work disseminated itself more subtly. And I think with Elvis, if you don't have him, it's like a domino effect. I don't know what other things we might not have. I don't know if we have the Beatles. I don't know if we have everyone who followed from the Beatles. It's almost kind of like a George Bailey, what would your life have been like type of thing. So I think in that sense, the 60s, artistically, musically, as they happened, like a band like 10 years after, that's a reference to when Elvis basically became mainstream. I don't know that that happens without Elvis. And that seems like a pretty big part of our 20th century culture right there.
Well, John Lennon often said before Elvis, there was nothing.
Yes, he measured like everything when his Aunt Mimi was saying, oh, you're never going to be anything by playing a guitar, John. He's thinking like, well, I mean, who's this weird cat like in the American South? This white guy who sounds kind of black, but he's not black, but he doesn't sound white. He just sounds like his own thing. Yeah, it must have been like a massive sort of paradigm, like off in the distance, for someone like that in their thoughts, in their dreams, in the cultivation of their genius to follow.
Colin Fleming. Hey, great talk with you again, Colin. We appreciate you making time for us on this 40th anniversary of the death of Elvis. We look forward to talking with you again soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, Rich.